Welcome to the show, everybody. Another episode of The Suspendables right now. On the show, Rusty picks his toughest guys, but they're actually the softest. What? You'll be surprised. Also, he gives us a great strategy how fighters avoided fighting the killer goon when they were supposed to fight him. Good move there. I thought I had my best take on something. Russ said, "No, Jim, that's your worst. It's killing me." Rusty says, "You want to run a guy? Fine, but you better be prepared for what's next. And goalies are weird. You're going to have to listen for that." Gretzky's son can get into places Wayne can't. What's up with that? And embarrassing plays by players. Yes. You know what? The reason that was so good is because I read it all. That and a lot more coming up. We want to thank Elite Promotional Marketing. They're starting a web store for us so you can buy all your merch with our logo. Great company. Check them out online, Elite Promotional Marketing. Thanks a lot to Drew and his gang over there who are helping us out, and cool stuff to come. If you want more stuff for your company, check them out. They can do anything. All right, here we go. Stevie started recording a little early, folks. This is The Suspendables coming at you again another week with me, Jungle Jim, and him, Russ Courtnell. We're doing this in the morning, Monday morning. We usually do it Sunday, but everyone was busy. You're out closing a big deal down in Beverly Hills. Where did you go?
We have a satellite office in Beverly Hills, and we had a meeting yesterday. So
ever since you've been talking about Discovery Properties, which is mm-hmm. who you work for, which is high-end real estate mm-hmm. deals, right? Tell us what it is again, briefly.
Well, they're resort-style vacation properties. I guess we do have a couple that you could live year-round, one in Nashville that Holly and Chaser are working at, Troubadour, right. And then one in Austin that's new, Driftwood. But most of the properties are second homes for people, so they usually, almost all of them, I think all of them have an amazing golf course, and then some have a lake club, some have a beach club, ocean club. So one's a ski-in, ski-out club called Yellowstone. It's just unbelievable. They're all beautiful.
So the reason and of course you sell for them, right?
Yeah.
You're a salesman. And the reason I bring that up is because someone said, he texted me, said, "So, Jim, I've been listening to every show of The Suspendables, and this job that Russ has, when does he work?" Because every time you talk to him, he's had this week, like he's living like a prince around the world. Every time, like, "What'd you do this?" "Well, I was on a charity deal. I was golfing. I was in Minnesota for the Vikings game. I was went down to see my daughter play and all that stuff." He said he should discover work.
it's because of the old handheld device, so I can email, text, and phone. Yeah. So
whatever,
baby. I'll be busy in the summer, like last summer.
Tell me this: how's business for those guys? Because the economy is shit.
Well, because the economy is on fire. especially in the United States, all the high end stuff is doing really well.
You're not being sarcastic.
It's doing really well. It's incredible right now. People have a lot of excess money, and they're looking to buy homes. And the beautiful thing about our properties and clubs is that the whole family is a member. So the membership goes, like when Paris and I joined, it goes up to our parents, down to our kids, and down to our grandkids when we have them. So it's a legacy membership. And so people buying at these clubs are really thinking for generations, and they're not, most of the time they're not thinking of 10 years or 20 years. They're thinking for their kids and grandkids. So
If I buy a house, I can't sell it myself?
No, you can sell it. The main member owns it. Like Paris and I own the property at Gosser, right. And our kids are members, so they have no say in the real estate. If we sold it, they're shit out of luck. But But really, a lot of these people are thinking for their families, what a, you know, that they'll have this in their family forever. But of course, times change, and sometimes people end up selling for different reasons. But anyways, it's a great, great club to belong to.
You've got to listen. I want to go down for the member guest. You keep bragging about it. I want to go sit at the tree bar. Down with that thing.
You don't drink anymore, so they wouldn't want you sitting in the tree bar taking up the stool.
You can't. the coolest thing I've ever seen there, I don't know if it was Gretz's property or someone else's, and I'm sure you've seen a lot of cool things, but it was a pool sort of up high and then a slide out the end of the pool down to another pool.
You idiot, that's Gretz's house.
It is. I thought it was his, yeah.
You were drinking, weren't you?
I haven't been there yet. I haven't been down there.
Oh, you haven't?
So, no, I haven't been down there.
Oh, so. Well, I got a good Gretzky story, so... I don't know how many people know, but Ty is engaged. I'm sure everybody because social media knows Ty Gretzky's engaged to his longtime girlfriend, Sarah, and they're getting married in New York, and I think in February.
Yep.
Anyways, her parents are members, they're Discovery members at El Dorado.
Oh.
So when he Where's gets that? Married... in Cabo. So when he gets married, he is now a member of El Dorado because of that membership going up. So right. he casually said to us at Gosser last summer, he said, "Well, boys, now that I'll be a member of El Dorado, you guys can come down to my club anytime you want." So he's a member, but his dad's not. So it's kind of funny.
That's funny. So how was the week, Rusty? Tough one. Tough one with Eric Hendricks.
Yeah, daughter's Minnesota boyfriend. Vikings. The San Fran is so strong, both offensively and defensively. They've got such a great team, and Minnesota would have had to pull off a miracle, I think, after watching the game to win that one. And a couple plays that could have changed the game. One, the fumble on the kick return, and the other one where they ruled it a fumble instead of an interception, and then Eric had that fantastic interception. So he played great. I mean, it just sucks when you don't win because it's over now. The summer begins for them.
Well, maybe he's got some of your personality because I could see you going in and go, "Fuck, I played good, you guys. Jesus, it's not my fault."
Clowns, the rest of you, what's wrong with you?
Yeah, football. The tough thing about football, of course, you played hockey your whole life. Is it's one and out, right? In football, and
not the best of seven.
Yeah, best of seven for hockey. Did you ever go into a series, Russ? I remember. Steve Yzerman, when he was with Detroit, and I know him. He's from Ottawa, and he was a friend of my brother's. Of course, I've seen
the brother that punched you out.
No, it wasn't.
Oh, the other brother.
No, it was my other brother. Although he probably wanted to punch me out, but I remember him coming into town. Detroit was playing Edmonton when Edmonton was rolling, baby.
Yeah,
in those days, and I just remember him. Sort of saying to me, "Well, we're going to give it our best." he would probably deny that today, but I just remember him going. He didn't say we don't have a shot, but he did say this would be an unbelievable upset if we could.
Yeah,
that's.
I remember that series very well because Stevie beat us. I was playing in Toronto, and they beat us in seven. And they went on to play Edmonton, and I think they won one game. I think we'd have to look it up. I think it was 4-1.
Yeah.
It was a joke. You'd go into Edmonton, and it was like, try and keep it close, boys.
But was it really? I was going to say, back in those.
It was a freaking joke.
Yeah.
I remember I was playing for Toronto, and we got snowed in, we got delayed, and we ended up leaving Toronto the day of the game, landed in Edmonton, and we had pregame at that shitty hotel right next to the old Coliseum.
Yeah, the Forum.
Walked across the street, and, went from Air Canada to the hotel to the rink, and we're playing the Oilers. And then they didn't delay the games or anything. If you could show up an hour before, you had to play.
Right.
So we get out, warm up. After the first period, I think we're up 4-2 or something. And we're like, oh, we got a shot here. Frick, yeah. We lost 9-4.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I mean, they had their power play. Everybody was a 50-goal scorer. It's like, no, Mess, you score. No, Cough. No, Kretz. Oh, no, it's your turn. Here, Yuri. Here, Andy. Andy. Yeah. Oh, throw it back to Fierzy. Maybe Fierzy wants to get one.
That's funny.
Oh, it was just like, bing, 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 bing.
Well, not only that, I think, I was just to say it was four, but they had Gretz, Mess, and Yari certainly got 50 one year together.
Yeah.
And then...
Andy.
And just outside of that, you had Glenn Anderson and Paul Coffey.
I think that year they had, I think it was Gretz, Mess, Yari, Andy all had 50 or more, and Coff had 48.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure he missed it by two.
He's going to set the record.
Yeah. Well, I think it is. It's got to be a record.
You know, Gretz was in an interview a couple weeks ago. Pretty good one. He's getting interviewed by everyone but us, Russ. but he's going to come on next week for during the All-Star game.
Scheduled to appear, by the way.
Scheduled. That's right. You're right.
Knucklehead.
Yeah, right. You're right.
You're supposed to be the pro.
I should know that. Wayne Gretzky's coming on. Then we got Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie. So we got to get the listenership up, Rusty. Yeah. He was saying a great interview. I don't know who did it, but he had talked about, of course, you know, how Wayne racked up so many points, and Ovi's coming up behind him over the next year or two. I guess he could knock off the most points, right?
No, goals, most goals.
Most goals. Wayne went on to say, Rusty, admittedly, that it was easier to score back in your day, Russ, and when Wayne played, than it is now. And his take sort of was, you know, they want to see offense, right? And you know, that's what the fan wants, and perhaps that's why, for many years, soccer was so difficult for North American fans to get involved because of low scoring and stuff. And what do you think, Russ? Would it be harder for you to play the same way you did back then and score?
Well, I think for me, because there's no hooking and holding anymore, it'd be an easier game for me because of my speed I was known for. So today's game suits me way better than back then. But Wayne is correct. The goalies were small. They had the gear was smaller. These guys are now big men, and they have huge. There's nothing to shoot at. I mean, if you look at the highlights from the '80s and the goalie, like you could see so much of the net. And now you're seeing a billboard, but the billboard is live, and it's a goalie, and then there's a little net behind it. And the players are all so much better. They're faster, stronger, better athletes. Equipment's better. They shoot the puck harder. So it's a tough game to score in.
Well, you bring that up too, that he did go on to say exactly what you did, that and he tiptoed around it, but we knew what he meant was the goalies weren't as athletic as the goalies are now.
Oh yeah.
You know, he said, you know, they just weren't. And I think off the page, I remember hearing someone say, not him, but someone else go, these guys couldn't bend over and touch their toes. You know, and now a goalie, you know, Kelly Rudy was saying he stretched 2-3 hours a day when he was a goaltender. You know, and they can wrap their ankles up behind their head. You know,
they're all the athletes today are in such better shape. I mean, look at basketball. They're all ripped. And back in the 70s and 80s, it was like shoestrings hanging out of their uniforms for arms and legs.
Right.
You know, all the athletes are they just education-wise, what they put in their bodies, how they work out, they're phenomenal. Everyone's bigger, stronger, faster.
You ever want to bring a room to a complete halt, Russ, like I've been known to do?
Take your shirt off?
Yeah, that one for sure. That one for sure. I'll just, speaking of that, I'll just reset if you're new to the show, okay, that I was telling Russ, good listener, you know, about my ex-wife who had a double mastectomy breast cancer last year. And I'm real close to her. She came through it like a champ. She's in full remission. And I was in Hawaii taking pictures of myself and putting it on Instagram with my shirt off. And Russ, you said, well, you can give your ex-wife your tits. Still, I got a sheet. We're going to do highlights of the year, yeah. Russ, you know, like you see plays
Rusty's
of the week.
Rusty's rips.
Rusty's rips. Yeah. You know, if you ever want to bring a room down when watching a game, you know, with a bunch of people who are fans of the same team, you know, we used to watch Oilers games, right, at the bar or when they're on the road, right? Everyone got together. Because you were right. It was like, you're not going to see a dull game here, right? And there was always someone on the verge of some sort of record.
Yeah.
And, you know, all those guys you mentioned. And of course, they had the best goaltender in the world. Maybe still does. Goes down to that in Grant Fuhr. And I'd be going there like, this is great. You know, there'll be 10 minutes left in the third. Fantastic. Let's go, Oilers. I hope they get a shutout. Right? And fucking heads. I didn't know how to cheer back then, Russ. Yeah. And heads would turn and jaws would drop going, did you just say that? Yeah. And of course, whammo, they'd score on him. You never say that. We were talking about goaltenders, Russ. And is it really true, Russ, that in a locker room, okay, there's, you know, someone will tune you up about what you can say to the goaltender, when you can walk by him, don't talk to him, leave him alone. These guys are weird. They need to be in their own zone. You live that. So there's that. I've heard it more than once, right? That
you can tell which goalie's playing and which one's not, because the one's in the zone and just doing all kinds of stuff. And Patrick Waugh used to bounce a puck in his stall, and he'd, like a baseball, he'd throw this puck down and it'd hop up and catch it, and he'd be doing this, and then we're unloading our bags on the road, and he went freaking crazy and yelling French, and I'm like, what? Said to Stefan Richer, what's wrong? He goes, he can't find his lucky puck.
Oh, no.
They put it somewhere where they hid it or something. Because, you know, people are always walking through the locker room and looking for something to sign. So you're like, don't touch Patrick's puck. Right. His lucky puck. So they hid it so that nobody would take it. And anyways, they found it. And then Darcy Walkluck in Minnesota used to have a hanger, and he'd just like flip it over and over in his two fingers. And, you know, you see now that the goalies are all juggling and doing visualization, you know, eyes closed, and they're moving like they're saving invisible pucks. And
right.
So
right.
One guy is like that, and the other guy is, you know, probably texting and emailing and looking at fucking
reading,
TV
reading
shows.
The paper.
Yeah, reading the paper.
Yeah. Well, back in those days, Rusty, though, it was a one goalie deal.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
It, you know,
yeah.
Now, you know, there was one guy, and, you know, Andy Moog was the backup here for years, and that's just the way it was, right? Where they played a bunch of games, there was no, what do you call it, platooning, goal, you know, first and second, like it is now. And, I mean, when you go to draft guys, Russ, I guess you gotta look at drafting two really good goalies, because that's the style now, isn't it? Have number
well,
one.
You definitely want to have you definitely want to have a great backup, as good as you can possibly get. Kelly Rudy's backup goalie in LA, because the old Forum had the Forum Club, and it was probably the best bar in Los Angeles at the time.
And,
yeah. And Kelly's backup after warmups would shower, put on his suit. And he wouldn't put on a suit. He would shower, put on new underwear, long underwear.
Yeah.
And then watch the game, obviously, from the bench. And then after the game, he would just take his gear off, take off his long underwear, and throw his suit on. And he'd be the first guy in the bar every night.
Sure. sure.
I love that when I heard that.
I've been to the Form Club. Yeah, I remember the best celebrity watching when Gretz came to LA.
Oh my God.
I didn't do the tour of the houses in Beverly Hills. I was lucky enough, driving a garbage truck here, following all those guys and being up in that Form Club. And I'm a golf nut, and Gretz always, he's super nice, super generous. He knows, all the great things he's done, certainly for me and many people over the years,
Yeah.
And one of them was, you want to go, you boys, we were there for a few games, I didn't go down for one, Russ. I said, I got to stay the week,
Yeah. When are you leaving, Jim?
Yeah, when are you?
I didn't book a return ticket.
Leaving? Who said anything about that?
Yeah, you just invited me to come down. You didn't say come down and leave.
Yeah, I just dropped an email to my kids and wife and told them, I've met a new family. Good luck, everybody. I won't be back. But he said, you guys, I've set you up in the Form Club tonight. Jimmy, you're really going to love it. And at our table, you kind of shared tables back then. I don't know what it's like now because it was so busy. And I was looking around, and I remember seeing, because he's from Sudbury too, and he's in bad health now, but everyone knows the story. Alex Trebek was there. And I've always told a great story about Tony Danza. But at my table was, me and Glennie were there, his brother, was Craig Stadler and his family, and Dave Stockton, who was at that time the captain of the Ryder Cup team, which was coming up. And it was just like, are you kidding me that I'm getting to see and sit around with these people? And it was a super cool place, man, going there. But
it was great.
Anyway, stuff to talk about that's in the news, as we say this week. That's the topic du jour. One is the Tkachuk hit on Cassian, and I don't know if you saw tape of it. Calgary playing the Oilers, their last game, and Tkachuk sort of he flattens them. People are thinking he would have got suspended. Cassian gets he doesn't get knocked out, but he certainly gets hit hard. Head sort of snaps up against the boards, but not full on.
He didn't die, but he had hit him pretty hard.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Jeez. And Cassian turns around and takes him on, and Cassian ends up getting a 2-game suspension. And some of the talk is that may be one where they should just let them go, the two of them. That's normally what hockey used to be like, If a guy hits you hard, you're going to get up, you're going to challenge him, fight him. I think that's the guts of this story.
Yeah.
And people are pissed.
What I took away was whoever runs somebody that hard should be prepared to fight, whoever they hit.
And right.
Tkachuk said, well, I think my teammates would rather see me on the ice and sitting in the box after fighting that guy. And
humble brag.
Well, humble brag, but also another shot at Cassian. Why would I waste my time? And then they were, the Edmonton guys were all like, it was a cheap shot. And if you're gonna do that, you're gonna stand up for yourself. And that's how I feel. I think I've said this on the show. Is that's the problem with the game today? Is guys don't have to back up their actions. And Tkachuk, knowing his dad and watching him a little bit, I'm sure he's a real tough customer and can handle himself. Whether he's a good fighter or not, he's going to be tough. I just know he's got to be tough because his dad's lineage is he was an animal out there. But
right.
That's the problem. I don't like that about the game. Is when you do that to somebody, you better be prepared to answer the bell. And I'm just shocked that the person who got hit ended up getting suspended. So that's too bad. And then it'll be interesting watching the 3-on-3 at the NHL All-Star game, because Draisaitl said he won't go if he comes on the ice. I'm going off the ice because they're going to be teammates during the All-Star game, which will be funny to watch.
I don't believe that though.
I don't believe it either, but. There's definitely going to be some tension when I'd like to be in the locker room when he first walks in, because when you're in together, it's, there's no avoiding that.
Right.
I remember I went to the New York All-Star game in 94, and it was just amazing watching these guys walk in the room that, you know, you didn't like or didn't know from other teams. And all of a sudden you're one big team. A couple of days.
The other thing about Tkachuk is he's a lippy prick, man.
Yeah.
Like in the media, right? I think he ended up telling Cassian through all that when they're interviewing him, going, hey, if you don't want to get hit, stay off the tracks or something like that, you know?
Yeah. But he's not lacking in confidence.
No, he's not. And he's young, man, right?
Yeah.
He's relatively new in the league, you know, compared to some of these other guys.
Well, that'll build the Edmonton-Calgary
rivalry
again. Remember those days in the 80s, man? Holy shit, it was like, get ready for war.
It was the best.
It was unreal.
Dave Brown, of course, who was a killer. Yeah.
Tim Hunter and those guys.
Yep. Metz always said, you know, if you didn't want to get in a fight with a couple of guys, you know, he says, lucky one of them was on our team in Semenko.
Yeah.
You know, Marty was tough, but Dave Brown played for the Oilers for a while and Philly, of course. And he said, I would turn and run, man, if this guy dropped his gloves. Not really. But he said, Dave, the problem with those guys, he said, fighting those guys, like even John Kordick, you know, in his day was a fighter, but, you know, he could throw a million punches, but they weren't as tough and exploding as if you took a hit from Dave Brown, if you got punched in the head, he might end your career.
Yeah.
You know, he's going to knock you out for 6 weeks or something.
Yeah, he was tough, boy. And he just looked at you. I remember in warm-up, he'd skating around just looking down. Yeah. I was like, oh, my God, I feel bad for our tough guys. Like, they must just be going, oh, no.
Shitting.
Yeah. And you know what? You know what happens when you have a tough guy like Dave Brown? Is the tough guys go out and fight the other tough guys just so they don't have to fight them. So all of a sudden there's a million fights and Dave Brown's like, you know, waiting to get his turn with somebody and they're all just getting in scraps so they don't have to fight Dave.
Oh, there you go. Smart move. That's it.
Yeah. Kelly Chase has got some great stories of playing with Tony Twist and how he, you know, the two of them would get into fights and just that. You know, the guys who didn't want to fight Twister always fought Chaser, and Chaser was freaking tough, man. He was tough, but he had a lot. Chaser ended up having a lot more fights because of it, because guys thought, okay, do I fight Twister or do I fight Chaser? And, you know,
Chase got pretty good.
Oh, my God. Chaser, if you want to watch some great videos on fighting, he was unreal. Those guys from Saskatchewan, Wendell Clark, you know, I always say he's pound for pound the toughest guy I ever played with. And Kordick. Yeah. Not John Kordick, sorry. Kosher. Joey Kosher.
Kosher, Saskatchewan guy?
Chaser and Wendell were like related. They're friends.
Yeah. And if you saw Kelly Chase, you know, if you saw Dave Brown and Dave Semenko, you would get it. You know, they're towering guys, huge.
Yeah.
Like bananas.
Knuckles are dragging on the ground.
Yeah, just giant, right? But if you saw Kelly Chase, he's a small guy.
Yeah, you know? Well, he was when he played, not anymore.
Yeah, always. That's it. Yeah, you got it. And super funny guy, man.
Kelly Chase, he's great.
Hilarious guy. But you wouldn't think he was that tough, you know? Or Wendell Clark, right?
Wendell, for sure, like... Wendell and I would go out to the bars in Toronto, the bouncers would always come over to me and say, he doesn't look that tough. He's not that big. I mean, really. And you could see they were thinking, you know, maybe I should take him outside and take a run at him. And I'm like, you know what? I'm there every night standing beside him on the ice. You do not want to go there. Like Clarkie was a teddy bear off the ice. Mm-hmm. Usually all the tough guys were teddy bears off the ice, and the little guys who didn't fight were the guys who were angry guys at getting arguments at the bars or with people because they didn't get their frustrations out. But the big tough guys, you know, Dave Semenko, he'd
total
sit at the
teddy
bar
bear.
And entertain everybody and just be a ton of laughs. And there's another guy that you'd never mess with on or off the ice. But
interesting thing about Semenko, too, is he... I got to interview him. I knew Dave. God bless him, right? He died a little while ago. And In fact, was at the fantasy camp, Russ. He was there. And he was telling me that he was never in any sort of fight until he played hockey.
Yeah.
Like no schoolyard shit, no bar fight, no nothing. He said, you know, I was on the team, and the coach told me, he said, Dave, go out there and punch that guy. All right? Go punch that guy right in some eggs. Yeah. No problem. Skated off the ice, grabbed the guy, punched him, and knocked him out. And the coach said, good job. And Dave said, well, I can do this if you want every game. And the coach said, fucking right.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to. I saw Shane Corson's another guy, right, who's he would rather hug you and be your best friend and lick your face like a dog than he would fight you. And I saw him at the sidetrack here at a bar that we all hung out at. And there was a guy who kind of challenged him, you know. And I said, it's got to be crazy, you know. And Shane said, "You just relax, pal." You know, like he was certainly calm about it and kind of laughing and put his arm around the guy and said, let's all just have a drink, right? And the guy kind of shoved him away. And Shane said, you don't want to do this, man.
Yeah.
Like totally patient. And the guy was like, oh, yeah? And he punched him, right? He punched Shane in the side of the head. And Corson still turned around and went, knock it off.
Yeah.
Like he didn't go crazy. Yeah. And the guy swung at him again. And then he annihilated the guy. he was even explaining to him.
Yeah, you're going to get beat up.
Yeah, dude, let's do the math here, pal. Yeah. You know,
I've been. Yeah, I played with Shane in Montreal, and he put those skates on. He turned into a tough, mean guy. You're right, off the ice, he just wanted everybody to have fun. And
he was buying drinks and invited anyone into the conversation. Yeah,
he's great. But on the ice, man, he would get into it. He was another tough guy.
Best bar fight ever. One of the best I ever saw. All around, you know, where a guy let him punch him in the head.
Yeah. And, Don't do that.
This baseball thing, Russ, yesterday, I don't know if you read it, but the two of the teams, Boston is going to get found guilty of sign stealing. The Houston Astros were alleged to do it. They did a massive investigation, and you know, something like 70,000 or 80,000 emails that they looked at. They were found guilty of this thing by the league. So this will surprise you, Russ, if you haven't heard about it. So what happens is the league, they were caught sign stealing against in 2017, I think, against the Dodgers in the playoffs.
I read about that.
So the league, the way they did it was there's three or four different stories coming out now, but all of them are, yes, we did it. Mm-hmm. And they're watching replays now, right?
Yeah.
You can watch replays of the previous inning. They're and then sending it out to the bench, and the benches, you know, some of it they say the players on the bench were doing this smashing of a garbage can in code that would tell the batter. So anyway, they get busted for it. And here's the fallout from it, Russ. Here's the consequences for their action. Both the GM and the manager get suspended for a year without pay. They take away, Russ, their first and second round draft picks for 2020 and 2021.
Yeah.
Okay. They don't get them. They fine the team for $5 million.
Holy shit.
Yeah. $5 million, no draft picks, suspension by the two. They ultimately got fired. The owner of the Houston Astros fired both the GM and the...
Yeah, good for him.
Hinch, I think, was the manager.
Good for him.
So it's like, that's the most severe thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
But I've always been of the opinion, Rusty, you know, suspensions don't, we've talked about this too, but they never really work. They're just not heavy enough. But I always thought the best suspension is, will this stop someone from doing it? And I'm going, bang on, fellas.
Yeah.
You know, a real serious offense, of course, sign stealing. But man, did they lay the hammer down.
Yeah, good for them. Good for them. I think, you know, you feel bad for the kid that doesn't, now they'll have a draft. I'm assuming they're going to have a draft now with one less or two less first round picks. So ultimately, that's going to cost some kids some money because, you know, if it shrinks down, that kid's now a second round. The last kid picked in the first round is now a first rounder in the first pick in the second round.
Right.
So financially, one of those players is going to get hurt by it. But well, good for the league and good for that owner. Like, you know what? I own this team. This is a representation of the city, the team, me.
Right.
Fuck you guys, you're out.
Yeah.
You know, well, winning, and the cost of winning, like, there's everybody wants to win and the pressure to win and all that stuff. But you know what? When you're freaking, you know, it's like inside trading. Freaking, just it's not fair to everybody who's playing the game.
Right. That's why I think, Russ, the league is up on their high horse now about the NHL, about player safety. And, you know, it's this awareness of concussions and all these things that have been happening over the years that have made the league straighten up and say we got to try and do something about this. So they're big on this player safety.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I'm surprised that you've said this too, that the suspensions just aren't big enough. You know, I always said maybe they should start with a minimum 4 games. Okay, if you're getting suspended,
yeah,
or you know, it's a 3 or 4 game minimum, so it's harmful. You said hit him in the pocketbook. So the league says we got to do more and more of this, and yet they let this thing go with Tkachuk, and I'm saying, well, if you're going to do this, some people are going to be pissed off when you give them suspensions that normally you wouldn't in the past. But that's where it would have to go. You're going to have to err on that side if you want to talk about improving the game. For player safety. And I just don't see it, Russ, in hockey that much. You know?
No, they don't. The game has definitely cleaned up and the headhunting has really subsided. And it's just way better, the game. It's cleaner. But if you really want to stop it, you just got to suspend longer and more expensive. And when guys... I'm telling you, when the guys lose their money, it freaking hurts. It hurts.
So what kind of money? You got to find a guy for like 50 grand or something.
Well, it's based on how much money you make. So every player, it's divided. You divide the games into your salary or the weeks into your salary. That's how it works. It's not a dollar amount. It's days lost, and then they times it by how much you make a day. So the guy making $10 million is going to lose a lot more money than the guy making $1 million. That's just how it works. There's some five and I think there's some smaller fines like 5 and 10,000. But when you're suspended for, you know, 2 games, 4 games, 10 games, it's what your base salary. It's based on your base salary.
Yeah. Anyway, I think they were kind of like they're almost full of shit. Saying we're gonna fix the player safety, but
well, I believe they are. I believe the game's getting better. I mean, there's still shit going on, but I think it's getting better.
Allow me to mention a good sponsor that we have right now, Elite Promotional Marketing, who are handling a web store for us that we're going to do coming up in a couple of weeks, where you can go online to Elite and you can start to buy stuff with the Suspendables logo. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm talking about. Elite Promotional Marketing. Thanks a lot to those guys. The All-Star Game is coming up, Rusty. And we talked about last week, we talked about whether players should go to the Olympics or not. And yeah, you got guys weighing in here about the All-Star Game. Ovi's missed a couple. He's talking about missing it again. And the league saying, no, you're not. You cannot miss this thing. He's not alone there, Russ. There's a bunch of players who might not say it in the press, but really away from the microphone are saying, it's a pain in the ass, man, to go to the All-Star Game. And I'm wondering if they should, I'm of the opinion they should just get rid of it. We're in a day and age, Russ, where you get to see any player anytime now on TV. And my feeling is back in the day, it was, wow, this is crazy, you know, to go to the All-Star Game. But my opinion is not very popular. About it. What's your take on it, on the All-Star Game?
The All-Star Game's fun. It's a great recognition of players playing well. But I, you know, the older players that have been around, like here we are with Ovechkin wanting a break. You know, all the other teammates are planning trips to Vegas, to Cabo, to Florida, to, you know, they're all talking about, oh, where are you going? Where are you? You know, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. And these guys don't get a break. So I see where he's coming from. He'd like that 3-4 days where he can relax and take time off. And
right.
And he doesn't want to go continue to work because it is work. You know, everybody's getting interviewed. You've got stuff to do. And they're having a good time. Don't get me wrong. The players are having fun. But they're not laying on a beach or sitting by a pool where most of the other guys are in the league for a couple of days.
Yeah.
So the young player that it's, you know, first couple of times is all excited. And then as the player plays his career, he's like, oh my God, I got to go to that again.
Yeah.
World championships was like that for us in the 80s and 90s where you don't make the playoffs and then you got to go play in Europe and players, I played in it once and I got invited another time, but I was injured and I wanted to stay home and get healthy and I didn't go, but I wasn't upset that I didn't go. I was kind of happy I didn't have to. But then Gret started getting involved in Hockey Canada and he told Bob Nicholson, he goes, you got to let the guys bring their wives or girlfriends. You've got to, you know, make it a better trip. And make guys actually want to go. And so Wayne really changed the mindset of Hockey Canada and what they offered the players just to make it a funner time. Like some guys would stay in Europe after the tournament and tour around. And
right.
And you were there a month. You know, guys are leaving their families for a month. And I hate to say it, but you're not getting paid. You know, you went from making money to going over there and playing for free.
Let's fix it up, man. Yeah, let's make it so players are lining up to go.
Yeah.
Mike Vernon, I love Mike Vernon. He's retired and still lives in Calgary, I believe. And funny guy.
Yeah, he is
not
funny.
Not much of a filter. But he told a story about me. I think the All-Star game was in Pittsburgh, and he got called and said, I knew I was in trouble when I was a little too hammered to have to start the game from the night before, I forget the details of the story, but it was he said the toughest part of the All-Star game is just, you know, is not partying too much, you know,
yeah, just there. Hopefully no one recognizes that you're still drunk.
Yeah. Anyway, so the All-Star game's gonna stay.
Yeah. Another one of your good ideas gone flat.
Yeah. You'd rather be in the golf course.
So far, you're over.
Yeah, so far, I'm over. Hey, you're playing golf. I see you sent me pictures of your new golf shoes.
Oh, I played good 2 days ago.
What's the most amount of money, Russ, you've ever seen anyone gamble on the golf course? I mean, you're in a all-world rich.
Yeah, see? I've never played in those crazy, you know, oh, they were playing for $10,000 a hole or anything, but a few thousand bucks. Yep. I used to play with Paul Redham quite a bit, and Paul Redham is a Canadian. I've mentioned him on the show. He's won two Kentucky Derbies with I'll Have Another and oh, shit, the hockey player in Detroit, they named his horse after. He's a huge Red Wings fan. Mm-hmm. So he and I are both high handicaps, and we used to play this hammer game, and it doubles every time you hammer the guy. And we were at Victoria. Yikes. We flew up on his plane from L.A. to Victoria one summer, and we played Victoria Golf Club, and I was on number 11 on mm-hmm. the road there.
Yeah, I know that course. Yeah.
Right off Beach Drive. And I hit my drive down the right-hand side. I was in the rough. And it was 255, and I had to cut it around a branch to get to the green. And I had my 5-wood out.
Look at you go.
And yeah. And he says, I will give you 1,000 to 1 if you hit it on the green. And I said, for 100? And we we were playing for a lot of money then. I think I won $3,600 after the golf. That was the most money I ever won in a golf game. But when I hit the shot in the air, he was going, "Oh shit!" And it hit the back of the green, went off. I didn't win. Oh. But I said to him, "What were you thinking when the ball was in the air?" He was going, "I'm gonna have to wire you $100,000." But he loves to gamble, and so he would play for whatever. But he and I played this hammer game, and I just spanked him one day, and I beat him for $3,600. But he beat another guy for like $5,000, so the other guy had to pay me, and I had to chase this other guy. Yeah. To pay me, and then finally Paul gave him the phone call and said, "You better pay him." The guy paid me the next day.
the most I saw was Mark Messier at the Edmonton Country Club here playing a guy named Bill Weiss, who's passed away. But they were on the 18th. The 18th is a par 3 at the Edmonton Country Club, finishing hole. And they were playing for $10,000.
Ooh.
Yeah. And it was the most hilarious. I was in the group. It was the most hilarious battle for $10,000 I've ever seen, because they both hit their tee shots out of bounds.
Oh.
Like, Bill got up first, snapped one out of bounds.
Oh, and then Mess is thinking, "Oh, I got this.
This is in the bag, you know?" Yeah. And then did the same thing, and there was rulings, and there was all sorts of shit. I forget who won in the end.
Probably Mess.
Probably Mess, yeah. He probably just stared him down, said, "You're not making that putt. Don't do that." Anyway, another thing was this week, Connor McDavid, who everyone loves to play. I've never heard anything but everybody saying he's the best player in the game. I've heard no debate about that.
It's because you live in Edmonton.
Well, I know, but even outside, you know what I mean. You've said it too.
Right? Your freaking bus pass doesn't get you out of the downtown area of Edmonton. Oh my god!
Well, who else is?
Everyone I talk to, and you leave out in Edmonton. No, he is a great player, but I'm just busting you.
That's okay. Morgan Riley, they're playing Toronto. Did you must have seen
Away.
What'd you think of that? I mean, they're calling it one of the best goals in a long time.
It was beautiful. Me, you know, being a Leaf fan, drafted by the Maple Leafs, and I love Riley. He's just a great kid, and he just got torched.
Yeah,
a great player.
Right.
Like, he's no slouch. He's one of the best defensemen in the league. And then McDavid made him look like it was kind of like it was Gretzky-ish, you know? Gretzky used to do that to guys every game, almost every game.
Yeah. You know, it was sort of the play, if you haven't seen it, Toronto has the puck down the Oilers end. Oilers intercept it, you know, in a pass across.
Blah, blah, blah.
And Connor's up at the red line, receives his puck, and he sort of skates around, looking for players to come up, and Morgan Riley's there looking at it.
Being bit.
And it's a fake.
Yeah.
And he goes up and skates.
The old look away.
Yeah, the old look away. Morgan Riley, because you had talked about one of the great dirty moves in hockey is when you're in a face-off is you just slam the heel of your stick on the top of the guy's skate.
Yeah, it hurts like hell.
Yeah, and he ends up breaking his foot, blocking a shot, so he's out for a couple weeks.
Yeah, and he after that goal, he finally came out and said, "Okay, I'm injured. I'm playing injured." Yeah. You know, he was like, "Okay, I'm only going to be embarrassed so many times," because he hadn't been playing to the best of his ability, and then that happened, and then boom, he came out and defended himself. Because a lot of times when we play, they say, "Oh, don't," you know, especially in the playoffs, "can't tell him about your injury. Don't talk about your injury."
Whatever.
And then you play like fucking shit. You know, you don't play to your ability, and then you go in to negotiate, and they're like, "Well, you didn't score, you know, you didn't play well in the playoffs." Well, you told me not to say anything. I was playing freaking injured.
Right, yeah. You got two broken ribs here. Yeah. Now you're holding
that's it fair.
Yeah. When you played, Russ, when you see that play, Connor McDavid, can you think of some of the best plays you've ever seen, or did you ever embarrass yourself out there, Russ, on a, you know, playing a game, or think of someone who did That was just, you know, sort of like going back to the bench, head down, going, fuck, I can't believe.
Well, you can't play the game and not be embarrassed once or twice in your career. I mean, it's going to happen where you give up the puck, or look at the Marchand last night and Marchment. The kid in Boston.
Marchand,
yeah. He whiffed on the penalty shot.
Oh, my God. I saw
that. He's never going to live that down.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. So there you go. There's one of the better players in the game. Whether you like him or not, a lot of people don't because he's a pest, but he's a great player. And he freaking whiffed.
Yeah.
He whiffed. I mean, he could do that with his eyes closed and pick up the puck, and he whiffed. So there's a great example of if you play the game, something's going to happen where you embarrass yourself, you fall, you give up a puck or whatever. But
I've heard a couple of players over the years say it's their biggest fear is on a penalty shot or the shootout is over skating the puck.
Yeah,
you're right, because once you do, you're done, right?
Yeah,
I think it's a dead puck.
I've seen it. Dave Gagne did it. Sam Gagne's father and I played together. Dave, great player, great goal scorer, 40 goals a couple times, and he had a penalty shot, and he whiffed on the shot. It was where he fell. I can't remember. It was in Dallas. He fell. Oh, yeah. I remember Gary Lehman lost his stick. We're playing Toronto Maple Leafs, playing Detroit Red Wings, both weak teams. Stevie Y was playing. And somebody ripped the stick out of Gary Lehman's hands, and it was an empty net, so he just said, oh, fuck it. And he kicked the puck like he's kicking it in the net.
Yeah.
And Darren Veach dove and hit to poke the puck away. And he hit it and it went in the net, so it counted.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
If he had just left it, it was no goal because he kicked it in the net, empty net. Like everybody went, what just happened? And then we were like, oh, my God, that counts. Like it was the reaction throughout the arena. Now what? Kind of like mess hitting it out of bounds after the guy hit it. Holy shit, what happens now?
Well, the problem with the player who's embarrassed himself or, you know, is not so much the freak out of the fans or the boos or the moans or anything. It's like, do you know how long I'm going to hear about this from my teammates? You know, when something like that happens.
We used to have in Montreal, this happened a couple times to guys. You'd have your... you come in, you have your game sweater and your game socks hanging in your pants.
Yeah.
And behind your seat, there was this ledge where you kept your tape and scissors and stuff, whatever you wanted to keep there. And for whatever reason, they left the practice socks. So home was white socks, white uniform. And the practice socks were usually red. And guys they're thinking of the game or they're nervous or whatever. And this guy, Alain Côté, I think was his name. He put on the practice socks and everyone's like going, hey, check out Alain. He's got the practice socks on. And everyone's like, shh, don't say anything. he's out there for a warm up with the red socks over his shin pads. And one of the guys comes up to him and goes, you're looking good tonight, bud. You're looking really good.
Yeah.
And he looks at him, he goes, how about those socks you got on?
Oh, no.
He looks down, and his face was as red as the socks.
the worst, the one piece, was it Philly? They had to be the worst uniforms ever.
Oh, my
Remember
God.
Remember the long pants or whatever they wore?
Yeah, they were bad.
Totally bad. Mm-hmm. At the top of the show, as we wind down here, I said, you know, we always talk for a couple minutes. I said, what do you got, Rusty? Bunch of shit happens every week, okay? You got the Kachuk and the Cassian suspension, the Connor McDavid goal, the All-Star game coming up, the Vikings, all this stuff. And you're going, well, you got to talk about Prince Harry and Meghan Markle moving to Canada.
I said, what? Yeah. How about that? Who's going to pay for the security and our good old prime minister up there, Trudeau's like, you know, they're welcome. You can already see he's just like, this is right up his alley. Some soft press questions.
Sure.
He's already, he's got the blank check out. Let's give him a house. Let's give him cars. Let's give him the military. Let's give him all the security.
Sure. But
I watched the news down here today, and they were, and every single Canadian that was, and there it was a lot of people, but they interviewed who should pay for it. The Queen, them, not one person said, oh, well, you know, welcome to Canada. Let's pay for their security.
Sure thing, right? Shoot them a piece of real estate. Yeah. Something.
There's our leader. There's our trusted leader, the school teacher, he's going to fork out the cash.
He's responsible for anybody who has no experience running for prime minister because, as the one guy said when he got elected, they just put in office a theater arts pot-smoking student. Anyway, Rusty, great show once again. What's up for the? I don't even want to know. Actually, I'm sick of asking all the time. What's up for the week? Because you live like Meghan Markle and Prince Harry. You made it. You must have had a Bloody Mary, Russ. Did you?
No, nothing. Just coffee.
I remember when I was in university, they had the big Panda game, which is Carleton against Ottawa U, and we're up all night, breakfast parties. And my mother was fantastic. My mother was a lovely lady. And didn't mind having the odd libation. Russ, my mother, okay, she could knock down a bottle of scotch pretty good. And my brother was playing for Carleton. And, my mom hosted this breakfast, you know, with everyone. It was just a shit show, right? We'd all been up, and then you're going to go to this game. And I said, well, I guess I don't want my mom knowing we're sneaking in a bunch of booze, you know, to the game. And I said, let's get there because my mom and dad were going to go to the game. And here we are outside of the gates and we're body packing booze, you know, vodka. And I put the liquor in freezer locked bags, right? Jesus. So you could, right? And my mom's watching all this, standing about 20 yards away. She was super cool. And she walks over, you know, she's got her, back in those days, you wore fur coats, you know.
Yeah.
And she's got her big fur coat with a blanket, you know, draped over her arms. And I said, oh, hey, Mom. Yeah, hey. And she goes, what's going on? You know, I said, well, just, yeah, we're bringing in some booze, Mom. I said, would you like some, right? And she lifts the blanket up to show me this thermos of scotch. She goes, no, your father and I are fine. Oh, yeah. One of my great memories. Rusty, another one in the books, brother. We come to you every week. We want to thank our sponsor that we have for now, Elite Promotional Marketing, who's looking after the shirts that we're getting made. And they do all kinds of stuff for marketing promotional material. If you want to get hoodies or T-shirts or coffee mugs, whatever you need for your company, go online, look up Elite Promotional Marketing, and thanks to them for helping us out. And to Drew and his son Gary over there, we appreciate that. And we will be back next week, Russ, with yet more shenanigans.
Mm-hmm.
You've been listening to The Suspendables. Talk to you later, Rusty.
See you, man.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.